Welcome to Jury Duty. I'm your host, Chris Terracone. Season 8 of Jury Duty explores the trial of Alex Murdoch, a member of one of the most powerful families in South Carolina, who is accused of murdering his son Paul and his wife Maggie, with the purpose of covering up a multitude of alleged crimes, including fraud and homicide. In our last episode, we concluded our look at the testimony of Roger Dale Davis. In this installment, we cover the testimony of forensic accounting expert Carson Burney and begin our look at the direct examination of Marion Proctor, the sister of Maggie Murdoch. That's all coming up right after the break.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
It is the late morning of February 14th, 2023, day 15 of the trial of Alex Murdoch. As we concluded our last episode, Roger Dale Davis stepped down from the witness stand. As we begin this installment, the state calls forensic accounting expert Carson Burney to testify. Mr. Burney appears to be in his 30s. He is balding with auburn hair and a beard. He wears a navy blue suit, a light gray dress shirt, and a dark gray tie. Johnny James handles the questioning for the prosecution. In episode 61 of this season, we covered a portion of the evidence presented in Mr. Burney's testimony. Burney had taken the stand during an in-camera hearing assessing the admissibility of evidence regarding Alex Murdoch's financial crimes. Consequently, we will abridge today's coverage of Prosecutor James' direct examination of the witness. Under questioning by Prosecutor James, Mr. Burney begins by explaining what his job as a forensic accountant for the South Carolina Attorney General entails. He reviews financial documents and tracks the movement of funds between the accounts of specific individuals or companies. This process includes tracing, which identifies the source and the final destination of funds. Mr. Burney looked into a $792,000 deposit into Murdoch's accounts that originated from the Ferris case. Murdoch had co-represented Andral Ferris with friend and law school roommate Chris Wilson following a 2015 vehicle crash, winning a $5.5 million settlement. Burney also clarifies for the jury the difference between the quote real Forge and the quote fake Forge companies. The real Forge is an actual financial consulting firm to whom the firm's checks should have been sent, and the fake Forge was a fraudulent entity founded by Alex Murdoch with the name Forge, where the defendant diverted the funds apparently for his own purposes. After guiding the witness through testimony about the defendant's process of fraudulently making a number of cash transfers, Prosecutor James transitions to asking Mr. Burney about loans from Palmetto State Bank to Alex Murdoch. Mr. Burney's analysis leads him to the conclusion that the defendant used much of the money from these loans to pay personal debts, and that he obtained these loans fraudulently as he did not have sufficient assets to secure them. After Johnny James concludes his direct examination of Mr. Burney, Judge Clifton Newman calls for a lunch break. After the break, defense attorney Jim Griffin begins his cross-examination of the witness.
Good afternoon, Mr. Burney.
Afternoon, Mr. Griffin.
I want to be sure we understand what you've done. You did an analysis of various bank accounts, seeing deposits in and money out. Is that correct?
So for the tracing, it was specifically the alleged stolen funds. I would just trace them out as they went through the bank accounts using that first in, first out method.
I mean, did you analyze any accounts that were stolen, what you contend to be stolen funds, were not deposited into?
There's probably one or two accounts maybe stolen money didn't hit, but any account under Alex Murdoch's name at Palmetto State Bank and Bank of America, those were the primary two accounts.
But, you're aware that he earned income as a practicing attorney?
Yes.
And did you segregate that monthly income?
Yes. So what I would do is prior to these funds going into those accounts, using that first in, first out method, I would completely deplete whatever income or deposit was in that account prior to, so we could separate each check out.
And you, in your testimony here today, you've for the most part limited your analysis to the $792,000 of the Ferris fee. Is that right?
Yeah, that's the only tracing we went over today.
Okay, and then you testified about essentially Mr. Murdoch's, I guess it was a analysis of liabilities versus assets?
Right.
About whether he had enough to pay A, B, and C?
Right, so what I did on for the date of June 7th, the accounts we had, I looked at balances in addition to outstanding loans. So that's how I was able to determine that.
And that was just purely balances in financial accounts, is that right?
That's correct.
And did that include any analysis of his 401k or retirement account?
No, in the balance sheet I had no, because those were in retirement accounts.
Okay.
So obviously, you know, you have tax implications and penalties and fees associated with those.
And did that analysis include the value of any real estate holdings?
So I was just looking at outstanding, what do you owe the bank?
Did that?
I didn't have up to date June 7th, 2021 appraisals for every land he owned.
And I think we all understood your answer, but your answer is no, it did not include an analysis of any equity in real estate holdings. Is that correct?
No, because I would not be able to determine that to the date.
And your analysis also did not include any interest he may have in real estate partnerships, correct?
Such as Redbeard and Zero United.
Well, let's start there, Redbeard and Zero United.
So I just had the loan statements and the outstanding principal on that. And as we know, they were charged off, I believe, in 2012, and interest was accruing, but this is just a principal balance that I was looking at.
But you didn't look and see what the value of Redbeard was and the value of United was.
No, I had no idea what they would have been in June 7, 2021.
And were you aware that he was had an equity interest in a real estate partnership that owned the PMPED law firm building in Hampton?
I became aware when I saw he was paid out of that account at the end in October, I believe. And then I would see occasionally, I called him rent checks. I think every month or so he would get a few thousand from that ownership.
But in your testimony of sort of a snapshot on June 7th, you didn't take into account the value of his interest in the PMPED law firm building, did you?
So I was looking at liquid assets, so would he have the ability that day to pay those amounts?
Okay.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Defense attorney Jim Griffin continues his cross-examination of Carson Burney by asking the witness about Murdoch's loans from Palmetto State Bank.
And I take it then you also didn't take into account his ability to raise capital through borrowing money from Palmetto State Bank if he needed to.
So I was only looking at outstanding loans, so okay. I can't comment whether or not he could. We know after the fact he got a loan from the bank, but I, you know, at that time I wouldn't know what he's eligible for or not eligible for if he wanted to take out an additional loan.
Well, we know before the fact that he had never been turned down for a loan at Palmetto State Bank, correct?
To my knowledge, no.
Right. And we know before the fact that he had paid Palmetto State Bank in over $4 million in interest payments. Don't we know that?
I've not calculated that myself, but if that's what you're representing.
Well, we know before the fact that the chairman of the board of Palmetto State Bank's position was, if Alec Murdoch wants a loan from the bank, we'll make it happen. You're aware of that, aren't you?
That's my understanding.
So there was no, and just to be clear, you weren't telling the jury that on June 7th, Mr. Murdoch's financial freight train was about to go off to the ravine. That's not what you were telling this jury, is it?
I was just looking at the account balances, outstanding loans, the fact that money had to be borrowed to pay back the Chris Wilson fees.
And he borrowed money from his partner, Johnny Parker. Is that right?
That's correct.
And you know, before the fact that Mr. Parker frequently loaned money to other partners in the firm because the cash flow in their business was, you know, not great until the end of the year.
I know Johnny Parker loaned Alex money. I'm not sure about the other partners, but you are correct. He did loan him money.
Now, in your analysis of the $792,000, you testified that that a large percent of the money went to associates, and then the rest went to pay credit card bills, right?
Generally speaking, without getting into a granular level.
Sure. Well, can you generally tell me approximately how much money of the $792,000 was sent to Curtis Eddie Smith?
From my tracing, approximately $500,000.
Of the 792?
Of the 792, yes, sir.
Okay.
Jim Griffin concludes his cross-examination of Mr. Burney. Johnny James rises for a brief redirect of the witness.
Bernie, you indicated that you were looking at liquid assets on June 7th, 2021. Is that correct?
Jim Griffin rises to object on the grounds that the prosecutor is leading the witness. James rephrases his question.
Did I understand your testimony a moment ago correctly that that's what you were looking at?
Yes.
Mr. Bernie, do you own a home?
I do.
So you've gone through the process of purchasing land before, is that correct?
A couple of times, yes, sir.
A couple of times. Do you ever sell any real estate?
I have once.
Was it an instant process or did it take some time?
It took months.
Months?
From listing to closing, yes.
So did you get the money for your real estate right when you sold it, or did it take all the way to closing to get that money?
Took all the way to closing.
Mr. Murdoch needed money from his real estate interests through sell. Would that have taken some time?
I imagine, yes.
Did I hear you correctly a moment ago in your testimony, or acknowledge in your testimony, the possibility that Mr. Murdoch paid over $4 million in interest to Palmetto State Bank on various loans?
That's what Mr. Griffin represented. I had not done the calculations myself.
As you indicated a moment ago, what was your aim again in tracing these funds?
Looking at their ultimate dispositions, where the money went to.
Did you start with particular instruments and then go from there?
I did.
And in analyzing where the funds from those instruments went, did a portion of those instruments go to loan payments?
Yes.
At Palmetto State Bank?
Yes, loan payments at Palmetto State Bank and to pay back loans from other individuals.
And did a significant portion of those funds go towards paying that $4-plus million in interest to Palmetto State Bank?
Yes.
And did that represent a significant portion of where the stolen funds were ultimately disposed?
Yes.
No further questions, Your Honor.
My step down.
With that, Carson Burney steps down from the witness stand. The state next calls Marion Proctor. Ms. Proctor appears to be in her early 60s. She has graying blonde hair tied back in a bun. She wears a beige cardigan sweater over a white collared blouse. Creighton Waters handles the questioning for the prosecution.
Good afternoon, Ms. Proctor.
Hi.
Go ahead and tell the jury, do you have any relationship to Maggie and Paul?
I am Maggie's sister, and Paul is my nephew.
Go ahead and, if you would, tell us a little bit about yourself, just where you grew up, and just a little bit about yourself, so they get to know you just a little bit, please.
Okay. I grew up in Wilmington, North Carolina. Maggie and I did. She was my only sibling with two parents, and we both went to college, both married, both lived in South Carolina. We've been here ever since. I'm married. I have three daughters. We live in the Charleston area.
Where did Maggie go to college?
South Carolina.
Did she go somewhere else and then transfer to South Carolina?
She did.
How far apart are you and Maggie?
5 years.
And your parents, what are their names?
Terry and Kennedy.
And do y'all have any other siblings, or was it just you and Maggie?
It's just Maggie and me.
Growing up, being 7 years apart as younger folks, was that a bit of an age difference as y'all grew up?
It was. For children, that's a lot. So, I was in college. She was in high school. So we weren't super close when we were children, but later on, as our lives became more similar, we became very close.
And how long ago do you think that relationship grew very close?
When the children were little, we did a lot together. It was easy. As they got older with, their commitment, sports and things like that, it was mostly holidays, Christmas, Thanksgiving. And then when we both became empty nesters, we were having a really good time.
Y'all talk almost every day?
Almost every day.
Tell the jury a little bit about Maggie. How would you describe her to somebody, just so they can get an idea of who she is?
Alex Murdoch appears to be emotionally affected by the testimony, shaking slightly in his seat.
Maggie was sweet. She was kind of a free spirit. She was always up for anything that was going on. She loved her family. She loved her boys. Buster and Paul were her world. She loved my parents. We, joked how we would grow old together and take care of them. And she was just a really, really good person.
Was Maggie a tomboy at all, or was she more of a girl's girl?
No, she was definitely a girl's girl, but she made the best of having two boys. She was right in there fishing, hunting. She didn't grow up doing that. We used to laugh that she'd get in the deer stand with her Southern Living magazine, and the boys would tell her she was making too much noise turning the pages. And then, fishing. She loved going out on the boat. She loved being at the beach. She loved going to the islands. I don't know that she really fished that much, but she just wanted to do what they were doing. She wanted to spend time with them.
What about the Gamecocks?
She was a big Gamecock fan.
Are you a Gamecock fan?
I'm a big Clemson fan.
Y'all still managed to get along?
We got along great. We did. And we were together a lot on those Clemson Carolina days, and we would have a big time.
Being kind of a girl's girl, did she like spending time with you and your daughters and getting a chance to do those sorts of things?
She loved it. She and my girls loved their Aunt Maggie. She always, said that she was their favorite aunt, and she just, loved catching up on all the latest makeup and, hair trends and shoes, and she just loved doing girls stuff with us.
Did Maggie work over the years, or was she focused on taking care of the boys and raising them?
She was mostly a stay-at-home mom. She had a little shop in Hampton for a while. She and Miss Libby did that together. So that was fun. She was real involved with the boys' schools, all their sporting events. I don't think she probably ever missed one. But she was mostly a stay-at-home mom.
What about Paul? Did you get to know him, obviously, as your nephew?
Yes.
Tell the jury just a little bit about Paul and what he was like.
Paul was a sweet, sweet boy, misrepresented in the media. He had such a kind side to him. He was always wanting to help. Aunt Marion, does Uncle Bart need some wood? He'd bring us a load of wood. He was a kind soul, and I loved him a lot.
Was Maggie very involved in the family finances, to your knowledge?
Not at all.
Explain to the jury a little bit, if you would.
They had a comfortable life. Maggie was happy. It wasn't a lavish life, but it was a comfortable life. And, I mean, money just, it was never an issue for her that she knew about.
That she knew about?
Right.
I think you said you don't think Maggie ever balanced checkbook, because finances, what?
She didn't. So I was the sister who balanced it to the penny and went crazy if I made a mistake in my checkbook. Maggie's was in the floor of her car with all of her bills thrown all over it, and she didn't. Organization was not her best skill.
Mr. Randolph, Paul's grandfather, did you know him?
I did.
And then his spouse was who?
Miss Libby.
Towards the end of Maggie Paul's life, can you tell the jury just a little bit about Miss Libby's health?
Miss Libby had Alzheimer's and wasn't too bad at first, but she's been declining for years, and it's real bad now. I think she stays in bed all day. She doesn't recognize her family, and she has to be helped to do everything. She can't feed herself or go to the bathroom or do anything.
Back in June of 2021, was her condition similar in that regard?
Yes.
Back in June of 2021, was Mr. Randolph suffering any health issues?
Mr. Randolph was really sick. He had lots of different things wrong with him, and I think that his days were coming close to an end.
And the days leading up to Paul and Maggie's death, had the family received some not encouraging news about Mr. Randolph's diagnosis?
Correct. I think that they felt like everything had been done for him that could be done. And I'm not sure Mr. Randolph wanted anything else done to him either. It had been a long road for him.
Backing up a little bit, the family, Alec and Maggie's family, properties, did they have a house in Hampton at one time?
They did. They built that house.
And did they have a beach house?
They did.
And where was that?
At Estowe.
And when did they get the beach house, roughly? Do you recall?
Oh, gosh. I really don't know. They've had it for a long time, 15. I really don't know. I'm sorry.
And what about Moselle? They had that property as well?
Yes. Moselle was their most recent property, and it was kind of a hunting plantation type place. Great setup for hunting everything, and lots of beds for Alec to have men come out and have hunts, and not Maggie's favorite place to be, but the boys loved it.
With that, we bring to a close this episode of Jury Duty, the trial of Alex Murdoch. Please join us on our next installment as we continue our review of the testimony of Marion Proctor, the older sister of Maggie Murdoch. Also, check out the Ambie-nominated crime story podcast, Night Raid, wherever you get your podcasts. And if you would like to listen to these episodes early and ad-free, head over to our Jury Duty Crime Story Patreon page. You can find more information about this trial on our Jury Duty Crime Story Patreon page or at crimestory.com. Jury Duty is created and produced by Carrie and Tholis. It was co-produced, written, and edited by yours truly, Chris Terracone. Music for this episode was provided by Strike Audio. Trial audio is courtesy of Law & Crime Networks. Thank you for joining us, and we hope you will come back for the next episode of Jury Duty.